There's a large TV screen here. Generally, when I see a TV, I think, oh, Maya is here. When I entered on the TV screen were video clips of, oh, in those days, not video, that must have been taken by the old filming system, of Srila Prabhupada's activities and pastimes. So maybe I'll stop telling everyone to throw out your TV, which I've been preaching for years, and tell them, get the complete Prabhupada DVD library and watch that. TV is nonsense, generally. Generally through TV, kam, krodha, and lobha are promoted. Lust, greed, and anger, which are the three gates leading to hell. Lust, sex, in its gross and subtle overtones, or gross manifestation and subtle overtones, is practically all pervading on TV. Krodha, anger, violence, and lobha, greed, buy this, buy that, buy everything else, that's TV. But in the Srila Prabhupada DVD library, by watching this, you'll become completely free from all those bad influences. So, yeah, TV is very good. If you watch this, everything is useful if it's... if its proper usage is there. Srila Prabhupada, we just as we came in, we saw these, what are called the early days. We saw footage of that. The early days. In ISKCON, the Hare Krishna movement, when we speak of the early days, we mean the first years of Srila Prabhupada's ministration in the West. Srila Prabhupada came to the West, and eventually some people started listening to him. The listening process took some time. In the beginning, people liked to chant with Srila Prabhupada. They thought that was something pleasing, interesting, spiritual, far out. Far out was the 1970s version of cool. Nowadays things are cool. In those days they were far out. And they liked to eat what Srila Prabhupada gave them, which was nourishing, wholesome, delicious, spiritual vegetarian food called Krishna Prasadam, the form of Krishna's mercy in the form of food. Who could imagine that you can get spiritually advanced by eating? Generally people think you get spiritually advanced by stopping eating. Well, that's also there. So eventually some people started listening to Prabhupada. But what would they hear? What could they hear? If we consider Srila Prabhupada's antecedents, what came before Srila Prabhupada? What wealth Srila Prabhupada came to give? That the people he was ministering to, they had absolutely no idea of what Prabhupada could give to them. They were culturally retarded, or as you would say in the modern age, culturally challenged. Srila Prabhupada, he was the disciple of course, in Indian culture, every Hindu has to have a guru. That's an important part of Hindu culture. Nowadays, people don't follow that, but there was an idea that you have to have a guru, because their well-known injunctions in the Vedic scriptures, that unless you have a guru, you're not even a human being, your life is spoiled, you have to have a guru. Those who were gurus made sure that people knew about that, because most of the gurus were doing so on a business-like basis. So when we say Srila Prabhupada had a guru, that it's not such an amazing thing unless we know who his guru is. And as Srila Prabhupada said about his own guru, he was no ordinary guru, he was a Vaikuntha man. He clearly, everything about him, it was very clear from his behavior, and especially from his speaking and his writing, his words, that he was the guru of Srila Prabhupada. Had nothing to do with this plane of existence. He was clearly on a superior level, completely absorbed in transcendence. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. His words, the formation of them, the vocabulary, the syntax, so the sentences would be often so long and complex terms that he mostly spoke in Bengali, but most Bengalis, they can't, and if you read to them his writings, they can't understand what he's saying. Very technical, philosophical Sanskrit terms. And even if you can understand the terms, often when you read the sentences, the long sentences, and at some point you're not sure whether it's going this way or that way, and then what the meaning is, you might have to read it several times. And I had the experience with some sentence I couldn't understand. I took it to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, and he couldn't understand it either. So a very complex style, but paradoxically, at the same time, his style was absolutely clear. Means that it could not, if you take the trouble to understand what he says, and it's not just a matter of taking the trouble, one has to be favored with his mercy, the descent of the absolute, he would use those terms in English, that when the mercy comes down by which you can go up, and there's a meeting between the person on the platform of transcendence and the person in the gutter, and the person comes up by the mercy of the guru, the person's consciousness becomes raised, then he can understand what is being said, and everything becomes exceedingly clear. And the special feature of his writing is that it's very difficult to misinterpret. Generally people like to misinterpret because they don't like what is said. So they like to reinterpret, which means misinterpret. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he had a particular mission in this world. All the great acharyas, they have a particular mission. Acharya is practically a synonym for guru. Guru is sometimes translated as teacher, but it doesn't mean like a teacher in the school, like you have now. Nothing like that. The word guru is actually the concept of teacher and the understanding of guru, they are completely different terms. A guru means one who places one's fate in the hands of a guru. One has so much confidence that this person is quite competent to guide me to the ultimate goal of life, and that I have to accept this guidance, I have to follow. My whole purpose of existence rests on submission to this person. It requires tremendous faith. The kind of faith that a child has in the mother. Just intimate, natural faith. That doesn't come very easily to people in the modern world, especially with the culture of not having faith in anything. And that's actually propagated. That is the part of the what is called the scientific method, which pervades all fields of education, that you don't have intimate faith in anything, because there is no absolute reality anyway, and knowledge is only that which we can amass. The human race is engaged in amassing various details of knowledge on various subjects, but we can never be sure that anything's fully correct, and probably it isn't. And whatever we call knowledge now is subject to revision as we make more discoveries. And so there's no use to have faith in anything absolute, because nothing is ultimately real anyway. These are the underlying principles of the empiric method, which the ambassadors from the spiritual world, from the outset, they oppose this hypocritical system of gaining knowledge. Hypocritical because they teach as if they know, whereas ultimately their method rests on the premise that they don't know. And actually most of what is taught in the schools, already those in whichever field one is studying, unless it's maybe learning how to speak French, which is fairly fixed. But whatever they're teaching, those who are in the vanguard of research, they already know that all this stuff's out of date, but it takes them time to update their curricula. So you're already being taught the stuff which those who are teaching it, if they're in touch with what the latest research is, they already know that it's not correct according to their latest standard of knowledge. So they're deliberately teaching you something. I asked someone, actually, once I met at a science convention. I'm going off away from my subject. I'll come back here. Once I was at a science convention, All India Science Convention. So I met one professor. I was going to the hostels where they were lodged, sorry. So he asked me what I was doing, and I said, I asked him what he was doing, and he said, well, nowadays I mostly go to these conventions all over the world, and I present different papers. And he asked me what I was doing, and I said, I'm distributing this book, which shows that the scientist's idea of Darwinian evolution is all nonsense. And he laughed, and he said, well, we already know that. And then I said, so why are you still teaching it? And he said, well, we didn't come up with anything else to teach. That's what he said. That was 20 years ago. He still didn't come up with anything else. So those who are transcendentalists, or actual transcendentalists, who are in touch with reality, and by in touch with reality, I don't mean someone who's contacted their inner baby and they have some fuzzy feeling of being one with some cosmic light or something. They actually know the fact that we are all eternal spiritual parts and parcels of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of God, and we are His servants. It's actually the principle that is very clear, straightforward, and easy to understand. Now, why did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then speak in such a complex style? Because people are stupid. That is the reason. And they think they know a lot. And they think they've They are called Mayaya Paritta Jnana, people who have amassed so much knowledge by this defective system of thinking that simply by observing the world and applying our own intelligence, we can understand everything. The very system from the outset is defective. But people become very proud that they've amassed so much information, and then they cook it up in their minds and they come up with various philosophical skews. So this has been going on in India, which is a very philosophical land by tradition, believe it or not. If you go nowadays, you wouldn't think so at all. I mean, what is India today? Bollywood? Bollywood means the imitation of Hollywood. Actually, in some ways,
better.
They do better, yeah. They have more fun. Indian people in general are more light-hearted. So, cricket and other nonsense, and widespread corruption, and then when you get into the so-called spiritual field, you've got the embracing female god, goddess, and then you have the wheelchair Bhagawan who just died, thank God. And, all kinds of completely bogus people passing as spiritual. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarthakur, he came in an era which was still in many ways very traditional. There are many traditional scholars who take the Vedas, the original, actually they're not even original, they're eternal. When we say original, it gives the idea that they came into existence, but the Vedas are eternal, but they have been interpreted in various ways by various people and come up with all kinds of complex philosophical systems denying the reality of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and of our eternal relationship in subordination to Him. So, because they cooked up so many complex ideas, so Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur replied to that. Oh, and another important point is that at this time, in India, and especially in Bengal, where Sarasvati Thakur was mostly active, there was also what appeared to be a severe challenge to traditional, for want of a better term, Indian philosophy. Of course, philosophy is not Indian any more than the sun is Indian or Californian. But there appeared to be a severe challenge in the term of Western scholastics and academics, and the Western world seemed to be superior to India, as much as they'd conquered so much of the world and they had fantastic technology like trains, telegraphs, steamships, and most importantly, modern weapons. That's the cutting edge of technology is always the weapons by which to dominate others. So, Sarasvati Thakur, unlike almost all others of his generation, was not bedazzled or bewildered by the challenge of Western so-called scholastics. In fact, he opposed it. He opposed its very basis, which he called, well, it's a Sanskrit term, adhokita, which means, that's a Bengali pronunciation of what would be called in English, was translated as empiricism, with that we can understand everything simply by analyzing it. That reality is within the scope of our empiric knowledge, but transcendental knowledge works on the principle of adhokshaja, that there is the transcendental platform which by its very nature cannot be accessed by the mundane senses. Spiritual reality, that which is spiritual by very definition, is not mundane. we can see, touch, smell, feel, hear, taste, and think about that which is mundane. But that which is spiritual, we have no experience of. So how to deny that there is God, or there is the soul, or there is any spiritual basis, because we can't measure it with any machine, or we can't see it with our eyes, is rank foolishness, because by its very nature, it cannot be perceived by material senses. And it's also extreme foolishness to consider that all of reality is within the scope of that which we can observe. Why should it be? We can only see within a very limited spectrum. We can only hear within a very limited spectrum. We can only think within a very limited spectrum, especially if we have a modern education, which puts our thoughts, it lines them all up and puts them into a tiny little spectrum, and we think that now we know everything. Now we are making progress in knowledge. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in a what would be considered a highly philosophical manner, he opposed all these ideas and established Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are all His servants. We are suffering in this material world because we have forgotten our relationship with Krishna. Therefore, we have fallen into this situation. Anadi, as his father, or more correctly, his guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, stated, Anadi karma phale pari bhavarnava jale. Due to sinful reactions since time immemorial, we have fallen into this ocean, the water of this ocean of birth and death. So the solution is to remember Krishna and come out of that. Now, Srila Prabhupada was a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he came to the West with the wealth of this knowledge, this culture, and the ultimate treasure of all this culture, which is pure love of Krishna. That is the ultimate treasure. You see these beautiful paintings of Krishna, did you get these from Nathdwara? Did you buy these? Well, they probably were painted. Maybe you didn't get them from Nathdwara. They're probably painted in Nathdwara. Sorry? They were bought them from the temple boutique. They're probably painted in Nathdwara. That tradition is going on still today, this traditional style of painting. So, Krishna has been the major object of Indian culture for generations, for centuries, since time immemorial. The paintings about Krishna, songs about Krishna, writings about Krishna. But the ultimate goal of all that culture is simply to love Krishna, to be fully absorbed in love for Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada had this knowledge. He had the complete cultural, he was raised in that culture, and most importantly, he was completely full of love of Krishna, and the love of Krishna, love being an expansive entity, it's not something that's to be bottled up, it's overflowing. So he wanted to share that with others. So he came to the Western world, where the situation was very different from that in India. And even Srila Prabhupada, the India that he, at that time, the India that he was in, was different in many ways from that in which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was preaching. Saraswati Thakur passed away from this world, end of 1936, beginning of 1937, and Srila Prabhupada, in 30 years, India had undergone major political change, had become so-called independent and divided, and then the new government, the new Prime Minister brought in so many cultural changes which the British would not have dared to do. and industrialism, and the in many ways it was different. And Srila Prabhupada was especially, he wanted to reach and communicate this culture to the West. So obviously that that style of complex philosophical presentation would not be effective in the West. Srila Prabhupada was expert in presenting the essence of all the previous acharyas had presented in a manner that even people with absolutely no background could understand. Not only no background, which means no qualification to understand this, but the disqualification of being sinful. So many disqualifications, actually. In one letter from America to India in those early days, Srila Prabhupada wrote that, just to give an example of the lack of culture, he said that people here in America, after going to the toilet, they wipe their backsides with paper. And that was just an example of people in India. Even today, I often joke in India that you haven't become properly westernized yet, you still don't use toilet paper. If you really want to become advanced and westernized, you have to use toilet paper, but they didn't quite come down to that level yet. I mean, the thing is, you have to wash thoroughly with water and then bathe, put on fresh cloth, and then you're ready to go. But in the modern world, it's you wipe your backside with toilet paper and pull up your pants and ready to go. So this may seem like a very gross example, and it is, because it's a very gross culture. It's a culture in which at that time karma and reincarnation were not even known, Krishna was not known, that one should respect sadhu, saintly people, that was not known. They had no experience of such saintly people. They had some gurus had come from the West, but that one cannot actually learn anything without respecting, and respect for elders, not known. Animal slaughter, rampant, a totally materialistic culture. Those who were rebelling against the materialistic culture by becoming hippies, which is a word which will need footnoting, and you know, after a few generations, right?
Maybe even now.
Anyway. Even at that time, they asked Prabhupada, "What is a hippie?" And Prabhupada said, "You can say better than me. Something unusual." So the hippies, their so-called spirituality consisted of taking LSD. That probably needs footnoting. People still use LSD. I think they use other drugs. Still,
unfortunately, it doesn't need footnoting. Yeah.
It doesn't need footnoting yet. But you hear more about crack. I need a footnote for that. I'm not sure. That was after my time. So their spirituality consisted largely of taking intoxication, having what is in those days was called free sex, but nowadays you don't talk of free sex because it's just part of the so-called culture, and reading all kinds of cheap translations of so-called esoteric books like the Tibetan Book of the Dead and this Hermann Hesse and Alan Watts and all these different bogus people with all their bogus interpretations of philosophies, which are in the beginning bogus anyway. It's bogusness squared and cubed. So, gets worse and worse. I mean, it's already bad, and then when you translate it and add your own degraded idea, then it becomes even worse. So, that was their spirituality. So, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to communicate Krishna consciousness, and he was quite confident of doing so, on the principle that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. Everyone has an eternal relationship with Krishna. That is the defining principle of every living being. And that can be revived in this Kali Yuga, which is the age of quarrel, hypocrisy, rank foolishness, sinfulness, just, you know, think of every bad noun you can, and that's Kali Yuga. Kale dosha nidhe rajan is an ocean of faults. Astihi eko mahan guna, there is one great saving quality, that kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha parang vrajet, that by glorifying Krishna, one can become free from all these, all this nonsense, all these degrading factors, and one can be elevated to the topmost spiritual platform in service to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada had great faith in the holy name of Krishna, that by chanting the name of Krishna, people can become purified, that by hearing the message of Krishna, even presented in English language, which is is not at all suitable, actually, for communicating this. It may be a little difficult to communicate why it's not suitable, but those who have some knowledge of Sanskrit and languages close to that can understand how unsuitable English is for communicating the spiritual concepts. But the, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, is not the language exactly that matters, but it's the understanding and the presenting the clear understanding and the willingness of the person to accept that. So by chanting the name of Krishna, by hearing about Krishna, and by following the process of bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, that anyone, however sinful and fallen they may be, they can become purified and they can become pure devotees of Krishna, even with no background of this culture and even with total disqualification. So it seemed impossible that Krishna consciousness could be communicated to people outside of Indian culture, but Srila Prabhupada did what was previously considered impossible. And that we are sitting here tonight and discussing this is Srila Prabhupada's gift, which no one would have believed 50 years ago, that we would be sitting here today speaking about Krishna, would be considered impossible. Even Indians who went to the West, they were considered fallen, because for the very reason that they'd gone to the West, because the culture there is so unconducive for Krishna consciousness, and people are born with such what are traditionally considered such bad tendencies. But Srila Prabhupada had that faith that Krishna consciousness could be and must be communicated, and practically he did that. He showed that what was he made possible what is materially impossible, that people from any culture and any background can love Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada's followers, they only knew Krishna through Srila Prabhupada. They were to a large extent unaware of the tremendous depth that was behind Srila Prabhupada, the depth of scriptural understanding, culture coming down through many thousands of years. They were to a large extent unaware of that. But they accepted Srila Prabhupada's teachings because it worked. Many people who came to Srila Prabhupada were extremely confused and distressed, having dropped out from the main culture and then dropped all kinds of drugs, having joined the counterculture. They found no satisfaction in their life, and then when they went for the alternative, which was supposed to be the panacea for the all the evils of the modern life. If you go to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. There's all this idea that, you know, now life is going to be wonderful, but it turned into, the Haight-Ashbury turned into a complete disaster. and
that very same year, by the end of the summer, it was
the summer of love. It all ended here in Southern California with the Rolling Stones concert in which a guy was stabbed on stage.
At Altamont,
yeah, that was like the end of the. That was the end of the. The American dream failed, and then the hippie dream failed. There's one failure after another. What was that you told me? The American dream, it only works if you're asleep. Think of that one. So, but the disillusioned hippies found that this works. That what Prabhupada is giving, it works. You get peace and satisfaction, inner peace and satisfaction, and a bliss, which is not available from any amount of free sex or LSD or marijuana, whatever. And Srila Prabhupada himself was clearly for anyone who was not envious or at least somewhat attuned to or aspiring for a higher reality than that of either materialistic life, straight materialistic life, or hippie materialistic life. Srila Prabhupada was clearly a saint such as could not be imagined in modern America. Saying a dreamy, long beard, simply smile and hold a flower and say, Om, everything's nice, everything's wonderful, I'll give you a mantra. How much was it? $36? This rascal, what was his name? Mahesh? Yeah, how much was that?
$35,
which is a lot of money in those days. And simply smile, be nice, and use lots of words like wonderful, beautiful, but all these kind of words with no, just vague, just some. But Srila Prabhupada was very clear in his teachings, and not at all wishy-washy, beat around the bush. Made it very clear when he founded his society. He called it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And people said, why don't you call it God consciousness? And then it'll be more inclusive. Prabhupada said, no, we want to make it clear. God, people, everyone says God, God, God. People think their dog is God. And practically they treat their dog as God. So when you say God, it's the word has, just like there's this slogan I see, Jesus Christ is Lord, not a swear word. That's a popular slogan right now. So like that God, it's a word which in the popular imagination it's a word that you just take and ascribe any meaning whatsoever you like to it. So Srila Prabhupada, he made it clear. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada's saintliness, not some imagined stereotypical saintliness, but actual saintliness, actually decorated with all transcendental qualities, convinced many people that that Krishna consciousness is absolute reality, and all else is nonsense. Now, Srila Prabhupada, clearly he wasn't the only teacher of Krishna consciousness, but that gradually became discovered by his disciples, and more so after Srila Prabhupada left this world. His disciples gradually came to discover, so to speak, Krishna consciousness and Vedic culture beyond Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada gave a very simpler formula. As he said, you just hold on to my dhoti, my cloth, and I will take you back to Godhead. You just follow what I say, and I will deliver you. So it was a very easy formula. But gradually, devotees, they discovered there are many people in India teaching about Krishna, and there are people in the universities talking about Krishna, and so gradually their horizon broadened, and then various questions came to be asked, and this simplistic formula that if we simply follow Srila Prabhupada, when it was subjected to the different perspectives of various teachers and the different perspectives of various academic scholars, it seemed to break down. That, well, maybe what Srila Prabhupada said, maybe it's not as true. Maybe we're just being too simple to accept everything that Srila Prabhupada said. Now we see that those who do accept what Srila Prabhupada said, they get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. If you have the clear faith, even though it may seem to not tally with what other people say. Well, that's the reason we came to Srila Prabhupada, because we found that what everything that people say, what other people said, it simply ended in confusion. No one had any clear idea. But Srila Prabhupada, who represented all the previous teachers, the tradition, who based his teachings on the ancient or eternal scriptures, and was clearly a God-realized soul himself, if we simply follow him, even if we don't understand everything down to the last full stop, as we call it in English, or the last comma in the books, but if we accept the spirit of that, and accept the spirit that everything Srila Prabhupada says is perfect because he is a perfect representative of Krishna, then our spiritual life progresses very nicely. If we try to question every little detail, then many doubts can arise, which is natural, because we, as limited living beings, we cannot understand everything about everything. In fact, we cannot understand everything about anything. If you take any subject, even I don't know what kind of things they study in the universities. Probably you could. How about this for a PhD thesis? I wonder if anyone's done it yet. You could study the varying composition of the excreta of various species of butterflies according to the various environments that they're placed in. That's an interesting one. How about that?
Sounds very fancy.
You see? So, yeah, you get a lot of money, and again, get a lot of money, and you'll be popular with the scientific community for having. So, you know, even if you studied that all your life, you could become the world expert on the varying kinds of excreta of the such and such butterfly, which is a rare species. So you have to catch them and study their excreta, and you could develop, you know, the cutting edge techniques of studying excreta and collecting it in such a way that it's not damaged, and studying the various modes of what do you call that, breaking down,
decomposition.
You see, and you could become the world expert, and even though you're the world expert, you still can't say you know everything about it. And in fact, if someone else might get into it and challenge all your theories and even your methodology. So you can't know everything about anything. What to speak about this, to know everything about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very difficult to understand, actually impossible to understand by our mundane senses. Therefore, it is, as a general principle, it is very wise to accept that some people know what I don't know. They know the basics. They know the principle. We should simply follow them. And that which we don't understand, they may say some things which we don't understand. If we don't understand, we shouldn't even... The idea that we should try to understand every single little thing is in itself an obstacle to understanding. As Srila Prabhupada sometimes said, understanding comes by standing under. Whereas the modern system is you make yourself the arbiter of knowledge. I will study everything, I will give my judgment. So, better that we stand under. That doesn't mean that we become foolish, robotic, we don't try to understand what Srila Prabhupada's teachings are. After all, he did teach. He didn't say, just do what I say blindly. But try to understand with your intelligence. But we should also know the limit of our intelligence. And we should also accept on principle that Srila Prabhupada was a divinely inspired teacher. And he was sent by Krishna to this world to spread his message. And with that faith, we can make very nice advancement in Krishna consciousness. As Srila Prabhupada sometimes quoted, a little knowledge is dangerous. Because there are many people who think they know a lot, but they really don't know anything. They really, just like you'll find so many university professors, and they seem very learned and very intelligent, and they ask, or they write so many theses, but they really don't know anything, and that's reflected in their behavior. They have no love for Krishna. What the actual goal of the Vedic knowledge, prem prayojana, the actual goal is to develop love of Krishna. They can never, 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 even though they may learn so much about Krishna, they could even in some ways be able to teach about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness more than some practitioners because they study it minutely. But they can never get the goal of it, which is love of Krishna, because that requires that one submits oneself to Krishna. One submits oneself to the pure devotees of Krishna. One has to have faith that Krishna is our ever well wisher and not some Hindu god, some theory they have. Krishna is some tribal god who got grafted onto the Vedic Vishnu, and completely anti-devotional ideas which cannot help one at all. So, Sharalata, one of the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is that simplicity is the hallmark of a Vaishnava. Now, simplicity here doesn't mean stupidity. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, remember, he presented the Vaishnava teachings in such a manner that even people who prided themselves on being great scholars were humbled before him. Srila Prabhupada presented the same teachings. And actually no one could stand before Srila Prabhupada either. Big university professors. No one could defeat Srila Prabhupada because he was linked with the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna, the actual reality. So of course I'm speaking on a basic principle here. There are many nuances to this discussion which, there's so many intricate points which could be brought up. For instance, Srila Prabhupada insisted that the moon is further away than the sun. Now here's a controversial one. You'll find it right in Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, which is distributed in millions all over the world, is right in the first chapter in one of the purports, that women are less intelligent than men. that doesn't go down well at all in the modern world. So we may think, well, Srila Prabhupada's wrong, but it's actually intelligent to try to understand why it's right, rather than just reject it as wrong. So like this, if we go through Srila Prabhupada's books, we'll find that almost everything he says militates against everything that we've ever been taught. And why does he write that? Because he doesn't have to... why does he write all that? Well, he doesn't have to write that Delhi is the capital of India. That's all. He doesn't disagree with that. That's accepted. But there's no point in him to present that which is already accepted, but he has to present that which should be accepted and that which should be understood, which requires a complete change of consciousness, a completely different perspective on the world. Our perspective at the present time is Ishwaroham aham bhogi. I am in this world to enjoy it. I am in this world to manipulate it. But the proper understanding is that we are tiny living beings who are like flotsam and jetsam, or just waste floating in a great ocean. We are tossed around in the waves. We don't know what's going on. We require to be re-educated to understand what is actual reality, to get free from birth and death. So many of the statements in Srila Prabhupada's teachings are certainly very controversial according to modern thinking, but that's the whole problem. Modern thinking is deluding us into thinking that we're not modern, but materialistic thinking. At any age of the human race, materialistic thinking is that perspective on reality which is wrong. It's wrong because it keeps us in illusion and keeps us forever in the cycle of birth, death, old age and disease, which is miserable. So Srila Prabhupada came to give us that knowledge which lifts us beyond birth, death, old age and disease, which lifts us to the actual platform of bliss in service to Krishna. But we have to have some basic faith in that. If we think to question everything challengingly, then we get in trouble. Questioning is allowed. We may ask, well, how is it that women are less intelligent than men? Doesn't seem to make sense. We see many women who are more intelligent than men. Then that issue has to be understood in what some statements are contextual. So in this particular instance, generally that is so because of the that is considered so because in general there may be various factors, but those spirit souls who are not women, who are not men, that first of all, if one thinks I'm a man or a woman, that's a misunderstanding in the first place. But generally those who are presently in the present blip of time are in a woman's body, they're in that particular body because of previous strong desires for enjoying the world, enjoying the comforts of the world. So, which is a disqualification for self-realization. So that's it, simply. That it may be that academically women can do very well in this and that. So like this, I'm just bringing it up because to serve as an example of how Srila Prabhupada, he didn't desist from bringing up controversial points, because he wanted to present the reality, the matrix of reality, how we are to see this world and understand this world in a way that our thoughts can be directed toward Krishna. So there are many, many factors how to perceive everything in this world. But we should have the basic faith that Srila Prabhupada knows what he is talking about because he's connected with Krishna and he can lead us to Krishna. But we have to have the basic faith that he can do so and that we don't know better than him. That is required. That's what I wanted to say this evening. Hare Krishna. Is there any question, comment or protest? Yes. No, I'm looking back here. Sorry, I'm looking to the senior again. Okay, lighten it up. Lighten it all up. It's heavy stuff. Heavy, heavy, heavy. Yes.
But you were saying about knowledge and how really we can't know everything about everything. We can't even know everything about one thing. And I heard Prabhupada say one time that we're learning more and more about less and less. So a man is riding on a train in India, coal burning train. And the cinders below, you know, from the engine are blowing back. This one man hits a cinder in his eye. He gets to the United, very painful. So this is proper show. I heard him tell. So the his friend, you know, he's looking for a doctor. He goes through all the different compartments, and they can't find a doctor. Finally, they get back to a compartment at the very end. It's a whole compartment on the train. They're all going to a convention. All doctors going to a medical convention. He thinks fantastic. But this one's a cardiologist, and this one's a brain surgeon, and this one's an internal, you know. And he finally finds an ophthalmologist, he finds an eye doctor. Fantastic. He brings the guy up, the doctor goes and says, "It's in the left eye. I'm a right eye doctor."
I have a question. I'll just tell a little anecdote from my own life. That it appeared that I had a kidney stone. And I was in Baroda in Gujarat in India. My one disciple there had several. In that part of Gujarat is very common, something to do with the water or something like that. So he knew what it was immediately. I was just walking up and down chanting my japa. All of a sudden, this tremendous pain. And then he knew what it was immediately. He sent someone, okay, go get this herb, roll it on the shield on the stone, and then mix it up with some black pepper, and then take that, don't drink any water for 1 hour, and then drink as much water as you can, and that herb is called Patarbhed. It means it breaks the stone. So that was it. I took that, and then I drank the water after 1 hour, lots and lots of water. Then you just urinate it out. That's it, gone. No laser, no sonography, nothing. So then, anyway, afterward I went to the kidney specialist in Baroda. Like the top guy, went through school, he went to medical college, then he specialized, then he became a super specialist. And I asked him, how are stones formed? What is the cause? He said, we don't know. That was his frank answer. After so many, he's a super specialist, and he doesn't know. Okay, that's my anecdote.
I have a question, though. And it's a little bit detailed, but it's very interesting. You said that, I think you said Nehru, you know, when he took over.
I didn't say his name, but you guessed it. You guessed it. I've said it many times.
You said he introduced so many things that even the British wouldn't introduce.
The British wouldn't have dared. That's a quote from Prabhupada.
Are there examples?
Well, for instance, his Nehru said that, of course it wasn't anything original, but he said India's had too much religion. Now we need more material progress. He said that the temples of modern India will be the factories and the dams. I'm told that when he went to Sri Rangam, the biggest temple in India, he said there's so much land is wasted for this temple, we should have factories here. So the British themselves are very cautious about, as a policy, of not upsetting the natives, because after all, they were ruling with a minority. They're very much in a minority, but they were able to gain the trust of enough Indians that the Indians cooperated with them. Otherwise, if the Indians had revolted, then the British, even with their superiority in munitions, and they couldn't have held on for long, as Subhash Chandra Bose understood. So there are examples. It could be studied more. I mean, the Sangha Pariva, which means BJP, VHP, RSS, and the Bajrang Dal and all this. I mean, they're quite open in saying that they don't like Nehru at all. That if Sardar Patel had become the Prime Minister instead of Nehru, it would have been a lot better.
I don't know if it's true or not, but Nehru said that I'm the last Englishman to rule India. He prided himself on being
I'm British by culture, American by intellect, Indian simply by accident.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Here's an interesting thing. I recently looked at in Encyclopedia Britannica, and I was looking up Nehru, and the first line said that his family were from Kashmir. They had emigrated to North India. Kashmir is also in India, but they're trying to say that it's separate. You see the insidious propaganda by which even the Indians are fooled. It's an ongoing conspiracy which has been going on. They want to undermine Indian culture and say that everything from the West is best. The West means Britain and America, and particularly WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. This is the zenith of culture. Darwin, and of course many of the influential people weren't British, but they have to live with that. Freud, Marx took shelter in Britain. He wrote all his nonsense in Britain. So they want to make it, and people believe it. There have been people all over the world. I have a British passport, and British, you see, treat you with a lot of respect, and they think that this is something very great. But actually, if we study dispassionately, we can find that. I mean, all this philosophy, philosophically in the Western world, if they teach you philosophy in the university, they teach Western philosophy. Why? Why only? What about Indian, Chinese, all this? Philosophy means Western philosophy. There was one Russian who, during the communist time, he came to America and he became a Harvard professor, and he wrote a book, which the title I don't remember his name. He died early. He died young, but he, in his book, he did an analysis of the six systems of Indian philosophy, and he stated that, I can get the reference if you want, he stated that actually what in Indian philosophy, it just far exceeds anything from the West, which is actually a fact. They don't even know the first thing, that we're not the body and we migrate from body to body to body. Well, even the most basic thing, they don't know. So, you're going to say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is an important principle, by the way. I don't know if you're deliberately violating that or whatever, but deference to seniors is an important principle of culture. Just like if we're chanting the verse in the morning, Bhagavatam, then first the seniors should chant like this. It's an important principle of culture. Yes, please.
So you were making the point that this Prabhupada's mission to come and basically teach the truth that modern society had so far drawn away from, regardless of its controversial nature, and you know, just teach it as it is. But it seems, do you think that can still be done today? Because it seems like some people have the sort of mindset that what Prabhupada did only he could have done, and we need to approach things in a different way.
What Prabhupada did only he could do. Well, the truth doesn't change, right? So, and the truth is not that difficult. The points are not that difficult to understand. So if we have the confidence that we should understand the issues, clearly and present them confidently, and Krishna will help. If you say that no one should say it because only Prabhupada could do that, that means that the truth should remain forever concealed. I deal with all these points in my soon-to-be-released book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service, including this objection. Prabhupada could speak like that, but we shouldn't speak like that, because only he was pure. So does that mean that we should just we should just cover it all up and pretend it doesn't exist because only Prabhupada could say it? We should learn how to present it, that's a fact. But Srila Prabhupada often presented points in a very challenging and provocative way. He practically reveled in making these points that the scientists are all rascals, the moon is further, you did not go to the moon. Who at that time could have imagined? Nowadays people are thinking about it. But at that time, probably maybe the only person in the world who was aware of this one small step for a man and one great step for mankind, he was probably the only person who was aware of this. Of course, many people didn't have TVs and didn't even know about it, didn't mean it anything to them. It didn't actually mean anything to anyone. It was all hype anyway. But he said, Prabhupada, for a minute, said, it's nonsense. They can't go to the moon. The moon's a heavenly planet. You just can't get in a little joyride machine and go to the moon. You have to have qualification. You can't even go to America without getting a visa. And you think you can go to the moon? Why should we disbelieve? The Vedic literature, the astronomy described in the Vedic literature, that's been used since time immemorial to make calculations. Using the Vedic system, you can calculate what time the sun will rise tomorrow in San Diego. And this is an ancient system. And it discusses all the different planets, the motion of the planets, the varying speeds of the motion of the planets. Now, scientists became blissed out when they discovered Pluto, right? And saying, the Vedas, they know what they... We discovered something which they didn't know. We discovered this new planet, Pluto, and now Pluto has been deplanetized. They discovered it's not really a planet at all. It's just it's an asteroid, a bunch of rocks held together by ice, and there are hundreds and thousands of such things out there which are not really planets. You can't call them planets. So they thought they'd discovered something, and now you can see the ancient people, they used to talk about only these planets, but now we've discovered something more. But now it's quietly shelled away. You know, now in the schools they don't teach you about Pluto anymore. It was a great discovery which has just kindly just become undiscovered. So like that. Better to stick to the Vedic knowledge. They know Krishna gives the Vedas, he knows what he's talking about. He made this whole place. He knows it from outside, inside also. He from all perspectives.
Guru Maharaj, in one of the divine qualities in Bhagavad Gita, it says aversion to fault finding.
Yeah.
And when we see our teaching movement,
you have to get my book, this Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service. Yeah, okay. Can I...
Well, what is this question?
Yeah, alright.
That we're finding fault?
Yeah.
I'm sure this answers your question.
Yeah, okay. Well, one should be averse, one should not have the tendency to look for faults in others simply to denigrate them and try to show oneself as better. That is egoistic, demoniac, and has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. But one should serve the truth by pointing out how people are misguided and misguiding others by misrepresenting reality. So that such faults should be highlighted. So this apaishanam, aversion to fault-finding, that doesn't mean that you just say, see no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil. That's impossible to do. This whole thing, be non-judgmental. This is non. If you say you should not be judgmental, that is being judgmental. Right?
Yes.
Don't criticize anyone. That's a criticism. You can't live in this world for a second without making judgments. At every second you have to do so. It's complete nonsense to say one should not be judgmental. One should learn how to judge properly in a manner that is beneficial to oneself and to all others.
Yes.
One of the first things I heard Prabhupada say, I came to a lecture, and a professor from Cal State, Caltech, he asked Prabhupada a question. Prabhupada said, should I flatter you, or should I tell you the truth?
Great.
He's very straightforward about it.
Great, I'll get that quote from you, and include it in my book. No, these are important quotes.
Are you going to footnote me?
Yeah, sure. I've already footnoted your... You're already footnoted. Let them complain.
Who
wants to complain? They have to complain to Srila Prabhupada, they have to complain to Krishna, and ultimately they'll have to complain to Yamaraj. Really?
We're okay with the first two.
Really, if you don't want to accept this, then you're in deep trouble. This is the trouble of the Mayavadis and those. Mayavadi means they take the real thing, Krishna's teachings, and they adjust it to their own perverted sense of what is right. They don't accept Krishna's sense of what is right, and therefore the Mayavadi, Krishna Aparadi. In all respects, they're offenders to Krishna. Even though they talk about being nice, cosmic harmony, love, peace, beauty, wonderful, and they're all going to hell with all that rascaldom. They're avoiding Krishna and presenting themselves as better than Krishna. So I'll get that quote from you.